What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Tesla pauses the expansion of its vehicle lineup to focus on deliveries amid continued supply chain issues. Meanwhile, we've got the results in the heavyweight fight to be the world's top chip maker. And facing a police investigation into COVID breaches, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson says he's not going anywhere.
Boris is very much doubling down on being Boris, and that's something that he will be using to the maximum in the coming days as he looks to see out this crisis.
It's Thursday, January 27th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Elon Musk says Tesla will not introduce new vehicle models this year, betting on increasing its deliveries instead. The new focus comes amid ongoing supply chain disruptions, with the company expecting to boost deliveries by more than 50% this year. Journal tech reporter Rebecca Elliott says it's a means to addressing the global chip shortage.
It's been running its factories below capacity, and that's been due to both supply chain issues as well as challenges related to labor, transportation, Tesla said. So semiconductors continue to be in short supply, Musk said, though he characterized the crisis as less severe than it was last year.
This means new vehicle models from Tesla, such as the Cybertruck, are on the back burner for now. Facebook's foray into cryptocurrency, known as the Diem Association, has failed. We're exclusively reporting that the initiative is winding down and will sell its tech to a small California bank for about $200 million. Launched as the Libra project in 2019, Facebook envisioned it as a way for its billions of users to easily spend money. But the effort quickly encountered resistance in Washington over concerns the crypto could be misused by criminals. The World Trade Organization has sided with China in a tariff fight with the U.S. dating back to 2012, clearing the way for China to impose more than $600 million in retaliatory levies. The dispute centered on U.S. tariffs imposed on solar panels and other products that Washington said were produced with unfair subsidies to state-owned companies. The U.S. Trade Representative's office blasted the WTO's latest decision and said it reinforces the need to reform the body. Meanwhile, the EU has complained to the WTO about Chinese trade restrictions that were imposed on Lithuania after the country allowed Taiwan to open a trade office there. Lithuanian and EU officials claim those trade restrictions weren't made public and violate WTO rules. China's Commerce Ministry maintains it's done nothing wrong. And get ready for summer 2022 to look like summer 2014, at least at the gas pump. Wall Street forecasters are now expecting oil to hit $100 a barrel in the coming months amid rising demand and doubts that OPEC can increase production to meet that demand. After crude prices fell to uncharted depths early in the pandemic, analysts from Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs have raised their price predictions for this summer, with Bank of America forecasting an even higher $120 a barrel. The bell has rung, at least for the quarter, in the battle to be the world's largest chip maker. Overnight blockbuster earnings from Samsung and Intel revealed who's currently on top. It's a high-stakes fight at a time when governments are scrambling to increase manufacturing, and the lack of supply is hurting production of everything from electric cars to washing machines. Here with more is markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Hi, Caitlin.
Hey, Luke.
Okay, so the question on everyone's mind, who is the world's number one chip maker?
Yeah, so Samsung said that they surpassed Intel to become the largest chipmaker in the world and that they also posted their biggest quarterly revenue. Intel has been the leader for several years, nearly all of the past three decades, and so they've ceded that spot to Samsung only in 2017 and again in 2018 when memory chip prices surged. You've had a lot of demand for Samsung, particularly because their memory chips are a bit more ubiquitous in demand, whereas Intel's are a little bit more targeted as microprocessors. And Intel also reported earnings, but said that they fell in the last quarter.
Yeah, you mentioned those Intel earnings. We've previously discussed Intel's big plans to invest in new chip-making facilities. Is that spending dragging down Intel's results?
Yeah, a little bit. The company has been doing this like big revamp on new facilities and new products as part of the CEO's desires to revive their fortunes and kind of get back that number one spot from Samsung. And so they've been investing in domestic buildings and facilities as well as overseas in Europe. And so there's been a lot of spending, which has kind of just weighed a little bit on profits.
And Caitlin, how have investors reacted to these results so far?
Yeah, so Intel's shares fell about 1% in after-hours trading, and investors have been really happy with Samsung's performance and have been adding exposure to the company over the last couple of months.
Got it. And just pulling back to look at the global chip shortage, between Samsung and Intel's reports, do we learn anything new about when these two companies at least think the global chip shortage could let up?
Not really. Intel said that they're starting to see signs that it's letting up in some areas, but that the broader shortage will likely still last into 2024. We've heard similar things from analysts and that things are getting slightly better, but we're probably still going to be in the cycle for a couple of years, and that might continue to add into inflationary pressures, especially for automobiles and computers and other electronic devices. And so I think the broad consensus is maybe some signs that it's letting up, but still not quite out of it.
Got it. This story isn't going anywhere. That's markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's lockdown parties are now the subject of a police investigation. We'll take a look at why the most powerful conservative leader since Thatcher isn't immune from a scandal that's captivated British politics. That's after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
It's been a hectic 48 hours for UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. On Tuesday, London's Metropolitan Police announced it's investigating possible lockdown breaches at Johnson's offices and official residence on Downing Street. That prompted a heated exchange in the House of Commons yesterday as several Conservative MPs and opposition Labour leader Keir Starmer called for Johnson to resign.
Isn't this a Prime Minister and a government that have shown nothing but contempt for the decency, honesty and respect that define this country?
Of course he wants me out of the way, Mr. Speaker. Of course. But I tell you the reason he wants me out of the way is because he knows that this government can be trusted to deliver.
What happens next hinges on an independent report into the Partygate scandal that could come as soon as today. For more, we're joined by our UK reporter, Max Colchester. Hi, Max.
Hi, good morning.
Max, first off, what do we know about this report from civil servant Sue Gray? Its publication, I take it, seems to be imminent?
Yes, there's been a lot of speculation as to when this report would actually be made public. It's important to note the process here. This is an internal report written by a civil servant, and it is then given to the Prime Minister, who will then share it with the wider public. So there's a little bit of uncertainty as to when the Prime Minister will do that and even when he will actually receive this report. As you mentioned, there is a police investigation ongoing, lawyers are involved, and this is a process that could actually turn out to be a bit more complex than just simply putting a report up on a website.
Yeah, about that police report, the Metropolitan Police had previously said they wouldn't investigate historic COVID breaches. So what has prompted this probe now?
Well, there was a lot of media pressure on the police to look at this. The allegations, which they're now probing, have been dripped out over the last few months. And there have been photos, there's been photo evidence, there's numerous people who've come forward who've said they were at the events, who've said that publicly. And so I think the police have decided that given the evidence, it seems pretty clear that there was a public interest in looking at this. In particular, and this is what the Metropolitan Police Chief Cressida Dick said earlier this week, given that those who attended really ought to have known what the rules were, given that they were the ones actually making them. So that's why the police has now taken this unusual step.
Max, I know several Conservative members of Parliament have said they would wait to decide Johnson's fate until they get the Sue Gray report. But do we know if behind the scenes the MPs challenging Johnson have perhaps garnered enough support for a no-confidence vote?
Well, that's the big unknown here, Luke. People have been speculating about this for weeks, and it seems to sort of come and go and flourish. Suddenly, there's a sort of speculation that there's momentum building behind a set of rebel MPs who will then file these letters of no confidence, and then it ebbs away. And I think a lot of lawmakers in the UK and members of Boris Johnson's cabinet have said that they're going to wait until the review by Sue Gray is complete and published and read it themselves and then make up their minds. And so I think until that report is public, I can't see that no confidence vote taking place. But it's a very volatile situation in Westminster at the moment.
Yeah, and on the flip side, there have been reports of party whips trying to scare, perhaps intimidate, members of parliament into supporting the prime minister. This all has kind of a House of Cards vibe, does it not?
It does slightly. And to be fair, that's something that Downing Street has denied. But yes, there's been a certain amount of arm twisting going on in parliament. But more broadly, the message that Boris Johnson's been trying to relay to his lawmakers during this sort of vacuum ahead of the Sue Gray report is, look, I'm the guy who made the big calls and I've got them right. I've got it right on Brexit, got it right on the vaccine rollout, and no one has the sort of popular appeal that I have. And that's the pitch he's been making to his lawmakers as they await this report. But the problem is that his popularity ratings are tanking, and a lot of people have said in surveys that they're losing confidence in the Prime Minister. So it's a strange sort of waiting game that we're seeing playing out in the UK at the moment.
Max, Boris Johnson's sort of boisterous, I'm going to say anything personality has gotten him tremendously far in his political career. With his back against the wall, is he erring more towards being contrite, or is he doubling down on sort of what made him popular in the first place?
I mean, Boris is very much doubling down on being Boris. You're seeing a lot of political figures would crumble under the kind of pressure that he's under, but he's a political fighter and you're seeing him kind of slipping up the gears, if anything. Yesterday in Parliament, he was at the lectern banging his fist, pointing his finger and making a great play of the fact that he has been a great leader for this nation. And, you know, it was well received by lawmakers on his backbenches who were all cheering and clapping and waving their hands. So he has this ability to galvanize people, which is a very, very rare attribute in politics. And that's something that he will be using to the maximum in the coming days as he looks to see out this crisis.
Hey, if this approach has gotten him so far, he probably thinks, why change now?
Exactly.
That's our UK reporter, Max Colchester. Max, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Luke.
And finally, in news that's hit the music industry like a hurricane, Spotify has taken down Neil Young's entire music catalog after the singer complained about sharing the platform with podcaster Joe Rogan. Earlier this week, Young accused Spotify of spreading misinformation about COVID-19 vaccines through Rogan's show. Spotify paid millions of dollars to sign Rogan in 2020. Journal editor Gareth Viper says that while big-name artists like Taylor Swift and Radiohead have quarreled with Spotify before over its revenue model, this standoff was different.
Young particularly took objection to one of Spotify's flagship podcasts, The Joe Rogan Experience, which often discusses issues around vaccination, pandemic restrictions, and can be quite a polarizing force in podcasting. He said Spotify can have Rogan or Young, not both, and it seems like Spotify has made their decision.
Though, for what it's worth, Spotify says it hopes to welcome Young back to the platform in the future. And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.